So let's just go ahead and start off with your background. Maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Born and raised in Singapore, where we say Wang is the Wang. I do have the initials SWYX, so I go by Swix as well. And I made my way over to the States for college. I spent my first half of my career in finance, where I was in buy side and sell side quantitative trading, and then moved over to tech, where I was well known for developer relations stuff at Netlify, Temporal, AWS. More recently, I started the Late Space podcast, the AI Engineer Conference, and Joint Cognition.
Incredible. All right, so maybe tell us a little bit about kind of like, starting off, right, in finance, and then eventually sort of pivoting over to DevRel, and then pivoting over to sort of building AI engineer. Like kind of like what motivated this? Maybe sort of just like tell us your story.
Okay, there's like individual decision points where it's like locally it makes sense. I think globally, the meta rule for why pivoting a career is okay is because most of us do not have the good fortune to land zero shot in the perfect thing they should be doing with their lives. And life is short and you don't have complete information, so exploring is okay. And even though sometimes pivoting is seen as bad or like negative, like you get to decide what you want to do in life. And so I figured out that I sort of gradient descended my way into a love of AI and developer relations and content creation and community as well. So that, I mean, that's the rough idea. The finance to tech move was obviously very, very big. And I think the main insight there is that finance is very zero sum. The trades that I make, I am not allowed to tell anyone because that is alpha that I don't want to give away. Whereas in tech, there is still some alpha, but we're more open source. Like this concept of open source doesn't exist in finance. And being able to share people our outages and our retros and our papers and insights and all that, I think it's just like so much more freeing for me because I love to learn from others and learn from podcasts and learn from conference talks, learn from blog posts and all that. And just finance, there's just no culture of doing that. I think also there's just like more green ocean in tech, obviously blue ocean in tech. And I think that obviously has gone well. I think lastly on AI side, I was kind of waiting for this. I was kind of looking at GANs and the progress in GANs for from Ian Goodfellow's work all the way out to the present, like Stable Diffusion stuff, and realizing that this is kind of the Moore's law of our time. If you were living in like the 1970s, 1980s, you should have built hardware, but if you live in the 2020s, you should be in AI, and that's kind of where I'm at.
Awesome. Let's go ahead and like sort of dive in a little bit, here. So, like you mentioned, you grew up in Singapore, went to the University of Pennsylvania for undergrad, and you sort of first picked off like finance and math. Maybe like tell us a little bit about like that decision. Like first, how was, coming to the US? How was that experience, and how was your time in undergrad?
Not many people ask me that anymore. Undergrad was fine. It was very fun. I think like the idea of the liberal arts education, I think, is still alive. Like I did psychology classes, I did literature classes, I did linguistics classes that still stay with me, even though I don't really do those things day to day. I think that is like the liberal arts tradition that I think like people really enjoy. The one mistake I made was not joining the management and technology program, MNT,
Yeah,
but
of
instead I
course.
stayed
Yeah.
in
It's a great
Huntsman,
program.
which is the sort of grifter club.
I don't think so. I don't think that's a grifter club. It's pretty good. Huntsman's pretty
Huntsman.
good.
No, man, like Huntsman vibes were off from day one. I fought with Inga Herman, the administrator, for all 3 years that I was there. It's just like completely the wrong vibe, and like I should have just joined MNT. It's just, I just didn't think I didn't know I could code,
Yeah.
and I think like that was like a big thing. Like I looked at all my coding friends, and they were like, oh, like they all like knew bash commands when they were born, and I never had that opportunity, so I never tried. So it took me like much later to realize that you can just do things and
Yeah.
learn to code.
Yeah.
But like I was walking to and from my math classes, and I saw the DARPA challenge car that we were working on
Yeah.
with like and like I think like Sebastian Thrun was like in there, and like they were like just like really like legends in the field all back then, and they're just kind of working on it, and I just didn't do anything, and like
Yeah.
so definitely somewhat regret not doing that.
Yeah. So, you were at Penn for undergrad, and then you ended up getting a, sort of master's in financial math at UChicago. I think like sort of maybe in between that, were you involved with something else? Like, I know
Yeah,
you
so I was like,
were a derivatives trader, I think, right? Yeah.
derivatives trader, interest rate swaps, interest rate derivatives, and then currency options. The biggest role there was I was basically the yen desk manager for Standard Chartered, trading like billions and billions of options for our customers. Basically, something like 75% of currency trading in the world goes through London. And so if you sit in London, you manage a major G10 currency, there's like 10 of you that kind of trade amongst each other with every bank. And we all, all go to the same like clubs and stuff. And like, it's kind of fun. So that was like probably the most fun I ever had in my job. There's a very simple reason why. One, you are made, you, like they're like, it sounds complex. Derivatives trading sounds complex until you like identify the main Greeks to manage, so like delta, gamma, all these like theta. We don't call it theta in practice. We call it decay. And then like beyond that, like you're mostly managing a portfolio with Greeks that you understand, and like vanilla options is like pretty straightforward. Structured options is like kind of straightforward if it's productized, and only every now and then you have to break out the real math. Otherwise, is you're just managing risk just like any other trader. So like and. You have a set start and end time, and you don't take homework. You don't take work home with you, which is pretty fun. You have a number at the end of the day where you know how well you did. It's very unambiguous, and you don't take homework. And they have 28 days of leave. So like, yeah, that was like probably the best job I ever had.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So, you were at Standard Chartered Bank, and then bam, Balyasny Asset Management. And then afterwards, kind of like we talked about earlier, you sort of made this switch over to being a senior dev advocate at Netlify. So maybe tell us a little bit about that switch. I'm sure like maybe retrospectively it sounds kind of obvious, but I'm sure like at the time it was probably a big decision for you. What kind of like motivated that, and how was that switch for you?
So BAM, Balyasny is a hedge fund. It's basically a large hedge fund that is like kind of second tier to Citadel. So like exactly the way that Citadel is run, Balyasny is like kind of like number two, number three, depending how you count. But run very much the same way. And so like I just kind of fell out of love with finance. I looked at my boss and my boss's boss, and they were rich but miserable. They're like doing coke, they're cheating on their wives, they're stressing out and like managing a lot of money, but like having no real philosophy on life. And I was like, I don't want to be you. Like even if like if that's my win condition, then like fuck this. So then I was coding to do my job, but I never had formal training to code. I did Haskell, I did Python, but I never had formal training to code. And then I also realized like the biggest things I did in when I was a trader who could code instead of a coder who trades is that I built like kind of UIs and like interactive like apps for people to self-serve their analytics, their portfolio risk management, their option pricing. And so then I was like, okay, what if I like learn to do this for real? So like I went and did that. There's a hole in the job history that you saw, which is actually that I worked at Two Sigma for a while. That was and Two Sigma was like kind of my bridge between finance and tech, because Two Sigma is obviously a very techie place and all
Is.
that. The problem with Two Sigma was that they were very overstaffed and worked on very irrelevant tech, and it was kind of like me like not quite leaving the hedge fund world. So like Netlify came along and offered me like, oh, you can speak, you can write, you can do whatever you want. And I think it was like a pretty good deal, so I took it. In retrospect, like I actually like didn't I was interviewing for a different role, and I failed that job interview, and they offered me the DevRel role. But like basically I kind of made it my thing, and I did, I just they were like, just do whatever. I had no boss. So I just like they were they like anything that vaguely involved Netlify, and like, the people let me kind of run loose. I did end up having a boss, which I strongly disliked. But for that good like 2 3 years, that was really fun.
Awesome. So maybe tell us a little bit about like kind of like being a DevRel and sort of owning it end to end. I think like in many ways, especially in Silicon Valley, there's like kind of, the distinction between DevRel, engineering, so on and so forth. And as you sort of mentioned, right, like you were maybe considering engineering or a role like that and ended up doing DevRel, and it seems like obviously you really liked it. Tell us a little bit about kind of like what made you really want to stick with DevRel, as opposed to maybe trying out another role within engineering or maybe switching roles.
It's very simple. Like, I'm just too good at it to do anything else. So, like, my highest value in the market to any company is just doing DevRel because, like, it to me, it's like breathing. To other people, it's work. Yeah.
So it's basically what gives you energy, right?
You know, like, at home, like, I naturally network very well. I know how to, like, talk about different companies and, like, also be a spokesperson for the company I work for. While like not putting down competitors, you know, like the kind of stuff that you kind of need to be a public face for a company, you kind of either have it or you don't. It's very, very hard to train, and so I got lucky. I think let me say that. I will say also that I think actually DevRel was kind of low status. It's one of those things where like people don't view it as like legit. It has lower pay bands, but like. I think it's like a good mid-career move is what I usually say, because you get to hone a lot your public speaking and also strategic thinking about where you fit in an ecosystem, what the overall trends are. I see a lot of people graduate from DevRel to PM roles and to founder and to head of products. A lot of people stay in DevRel, obviously, but and to like independent educator and creator, which I ended up becoming. Yeah, it's a good stepping point that there's very, very few like chief DevRel officer. That's not a thing. So like it, you know, it's a kind of like a career that if you can yap, and if you can write, and if you can speak well, if you make good videos, you get a lot of money to do it, and it's like not that hard. But like there's like very, very few people who could actually do good, do it well.
No, that all makes sense. So I guess like let's maybe drill down a little bit on like what makes a good DevRel, what makes like a good dev advocate, right? Like you were at Netlify, you were at AWS, and then you were like head of DevX at Temporal. So like you have a lot of experience doing this. I think this is like a really unique perspective because not only are you pretty much the best one in the world right now, you have
Why
tried it
did you say
out. Well,
that?
I mean, you kind of are, right? Like, or one of the best.
People say this, but like it's like okay, like I
It
can
it's it is subjective, right? But like we can have opinions on the podcast, right?
Okay, I'll give you more picture, but I'm gonna let you finish, as they say.
No, I was just gonna say just like maybe just tell us like what do you think makes a good dev role?
Yeah, okay, so the blog post I have about this is called Measuring DevRel. If you just Google it, you'll see it. It's required reading. Apparently, it's someone at Google told me this. When you join Google as their developer relations, they just send me my blog. They send them my blog post. That's like, here, like here's what we think. It's kind of cool. Basically, there's a few types of DevRel. You probably don't want to measure a fish by its ability to climb trees. It, main idea. So there's product DevRel, there's marketing DevRel, and there's community DevRel. And they all have different things. Most people focus on marketing, but there really, really are community DevRel. I've seen them. They're really good. Product DevRel, really, really good. And they may suck at marketing, but they're actually very valuable. So just make sure you're like, you know what type you are. Like, by far and away, like, let's say like 70% of the industry is just marketing. Okay. So to do good marketing, like, basically be good on Twitter. The secondarily be good on like workshops and tutorials and documentation and stuff like that. And I have a dedicated website called dx.tips that guides you through basically what you need to know in terms of like community building or documentation and all stuff like that. So I think like the reason people regard me highly in terms of like the DevRel world is because like I not only do the job, but I'm willing to talk about how the meta of like how to do the job based on how I study others. And that's a general that all derives from the general principle of learn in public, right? You're learning a technology, you should write about it, you not be afraid of getting it wrong because people will correct you, and that's how you learn faster. And doing it very, very well. I have a book about it, and I have a whole philosophy that's like a series of essays about learning in public well. is good for bootstrapping your experience in a technology, but then also very qualifies you for DevRel. And then learning public about DevRel also qualifies you to be an authority on DevRel, which is like very, very meta. We're like 4 layers in. So that's like kind of how I start there. I would definitely say I'm very lucky. Like I'm basically like one of the last few writer DevRels because I'm very good at writing. And part of that is basically my finance background coming in because the kind of investment thesis I used to write for my stocks when I was in Dalia's Need a Hedge Fund, I basically write for technology. I write for React, I write for Svelte, I write for Temporal, I write for Cognition. And like, people in tech have never seen this before. They're like, "What the? What is? what kind of essay is this?" And so to them, it's like mind blowing. Whereas, if you work in finance, you get 30 ODs every day. It's very normal. But I think like I'm like decent at them. So like that's why I'm well known. I think since then, that window is kind of closed since like 2020. Now it's all like live stream on YouTube, actually on Twitch, and like short videos. And like I'm not a video guy, so like I kind of like I do think the meta game changes a lot. I think there's a lot of burnout in this industry because of that. And different people with different strengths rise at different points in time because they happen to fit.
100%. I think a lot of that makes a lot of sense. So you also ended up, sort of building the Latent Space podcast, which, by the way, we're obviously huge fans of. Probably one of the best, if
Thanks.
not straight up the best, AI podcast right now.
I know, man. There's a
There's
DoorDash
a lot,
podcast.
there's a
It's
lot,
number one
but
in the
no,
world right now.
there's a lot, but it's good, man. It's quite good.
Thanks.
It's definitely more on the applied side than like just purely research, but I think you do a good job of like balancing application research, keeping it engaging, high production quality. And you also started building the AI Engineer Summit, right? So, I mean, as if we haven't already had Sean balancing enough things, now we're adding on a podcast. We're adding on a premier conference for AI engineers. And we're also adding on, you're an angel as well, right? And so it's kind of like a lot of stuff that you are juggling. We'll get into character and like kind of your advice just for being a good human being down the road. But for starters, as far as things go with podcast and sort of building things, earlier you mentioned, you didn't really enjoy having a boss. It definitely seems like, you're kind of an independent go-getter. You operate super well solo. Maybe just tell us a little bit about the decision to create the podcast and decision to do the summit. Like, was that something along the lines of like, hey, like I think there's more that I can do than just like what I was doing at Temporal? Like, how did you end up making that transition?
Mostly it was like actually the Stable Diffusion moment that really kicked it off because I was like, you can do that as a local fucking model. Okay, like nothing I do matters. You know what I mean? So that's where I was like, okay, drop everything. But I don't have an ML background. Like I did a something I don't list publicly is I did the Georgia Tech Masters, the online masters, so MSCS. So I did that, and that's my ML background. I did some Coursera classes, but that's not, it's not a PhD or anything. But so like so Latent Space is my effort to learn in public about AI. I definitely have tended towards creating dedicated blogs for things that are high interest areas. And like I'm a good writer, so like it started popping off, and then decided like basically the most important thing is like collecting tokens from interesting people. And so if you write by yourself, you only have your tokens, but you might as well have other tokens from other people. So it like kicked off well, and I got a good co-host who helps to do the load. Like I think the hardest thing is like consistently showing up every week.
100%.
Because you lose a week, then you're like the second week you're like, oh, I already skipped 1 week. What's another week? And then you stop doing it.
Negative
so like
feedback loop.
most podcasts die after 7 episodes. So
Very
that
true.
we're like probably 150 and still going strong, so that's good. The AI Engineer Conference was a different decision. It was actually finding the AI Engineer thesis. So Latent Space was started with no thesis apart from let's learn about AI in public. And like really, I think the realization came from understanding that software engineers have abnormal power in the AI economy because they can wield LLM APIs, and that this happens to be ICP for all the labs, which are happy to talk to their customers, the engineers, but not tell you anything about their models, right? So this is like perfect positioning because I don't I'm like strategically positioned to like not never ask anything sensitive but I can actually get them customers. So like it's very, very nice for them. And then I think on the startup side, I think like it was just like obviously a very clear time that like GPT wrappers, like at the time, I think in 2023, a lot of the consensus was like you have to raise a bunch of money and give it to NVIDIA and train some models internally to make it as an AI company. And people were making a lot of fun of AI wrapper companies. And I think like the application layer has come back a lot. I think obviously model companies have done super well, but the app layer, has really fleshed out. Obviously I work at one right now. But like, in like I think people are no longer laughing at Cursor. People are no longer, I mean, people maybe still laugh at Perplexity, but like they have $20 billion and you don't. So, who's right? Yeah, so I think like getting the AI engineer thesis right was like, oh, I think like this is a generational shift in the same way that I have seen front-end engineering become a discipline. Like people used to not take it seriously. They're like, oh, it's HTML, CSS, and JS. Like that's something I'll do on the side. No, actually, it's real engineering. And it's the same thing for data engineering. It's the same thing for DevOps. It's the same thing for any other like sub-industry of software engineering that you care to name. It does professionalize and it does grow in complexity over time because it always does. And so I was like, yeah, okay, AI engineering is obviously going to be a thing, and I might as well own it because I saw it first. So then I started the conference, and it's basically become like the number one like technical vendor neutral AI conference, I would say. And it's really interesting playing this game of like being friends of everybody, but like also saying like you have to bring your A game to this thing because it's the only place where OpenAI shows up at the same level as Anthropic, as DeepMind, xAI joined us for the first time this year. Meta has spoken before, and I think they're coming back next month. So like, we are playing off the big labs versus the big clouds versus the RAG startups versus the agent companies and the Fortune 500s. So these are all the stakeholders. And then on the job side, I think it's very interesting, like coining AI engineer and defining this industry helps people hire for the right skill set of like people who identify as AI engineer are exactly the kind of software engineer that I need to build products, right? And then on the labor side, people who are like, oh, okay, like what is the dimension? Like I'm a traditional software engineer. I want to like, be relevant. What dimensions should I grow in? I now have a menu of examples that I can just give to people and say like, pick from these. These are the success case studies. So like, we have like 500 videos, 10 million views on like our AI engineer stuff, and hopefully it like contributes to the industry in some way.
Not just in some way, it's huge, man. And I completely agree. I think you definitely saw it first. It is like a pretty dramatic shift, right? And I mean, we've like sort of like read your blog post on this and kind of the spectrum from software engineer to AI engineer to like maybe research engineer to research scientist. And it really is sort of a spectrum. Maybe like tell us a little bit about like, latent space AI engineer. And now, have made the decision to join Cognition. So, I mean, you had a much like longer sort of blog post about this, as well as like a pretty long Twitter thread on this. But maybe if you want to sort of like distill it down a little bit, like what do you like? How would you sort of describe it to somebody who's hearing about you for the first time?
Sorry, about Cognition or
The
everything?
transition
To latent space and AI engineer or to Cognition?
from latent space AI engineer to Cognition.
Okay, because I'm still doing those things. I'm still,
You are. But like, but I guess before you were doing just those two, and now you're doing those two and this, right? So like, it's a bit
So
of a transition there.
the context is basically, I always had a third thing, which was called Small AI. It was basically like a product studio thing. I had some funding to just screw around and build AI stuff. And I built this thing called Small Developer, which is like one of the first coding agents back in mid-2023. And it was inspired by Claude 1. And I didn't have the full faith that models were there. And also, I honestly got affected because Claude I you know, at the time, LLM APIs didn't take model stability very seriously.
Sure.
I think the model quality like degraded immediately after launch. So on launch day, I built Small Developer. It went super viral. I recorded everything. A week later, I reran the same prompts on the same code base at the same commit checkpoint,
Sure.
and it was not anywhere as close as capable. So like they I think they quantized or did some bullshit.
Yeah.
And like then it was like, no, it wasn't usable. And then I was like, you can't build a business on this where like overnight your agent just dies. So yeah, that's where I stopped. But the Cognition guys kept going, and they built Devin, and Devin is a $10 billion company. So that's why I was like, okay, like this is what I should have built all this time. I didn't do it the first time, but at least I can join them because they're smarter than me. So I mean that's the transition. I would say like having coworkers is very nice.
Yeah.
Having I don't have like a boss like technically everyone reports to Scott, but you just kind of like you do your best, and like there are people who are more senior in the hierarchy and like less and people who are less senior, and you just try to do your best. And I think like the company has like a somewhat opaque hiring and firing policy, but I think like people who are high performers are not in doubt, and people who are not good performers also know that they're not doing well, and they get managed out. So yeah, I mean, I think it's like kind of fun, like working with like smart people, working with basically unlimited money, to like go pursue like frontier coding. I think it's really fun.
Yeah, so wait, let's maybe dive into this a little bit deeper. So, I mean, I Cognition, to the extent that you're able to sort of talk about, like, are you still working on developer relations? Like, are you working on building the community for people working on Cognition? How would you sort of describe your day-to-day?
Yeah, the main condition. So I, because I kind of retired from DevRel
Right.
after Temporal, basically.
Exactly.
So I was like, I didn't want to do DevRel. I think like I've done it. It's cool. It's a good job. But like for
Yeah.
someone younger than me, I'm like I'm not really in the business to like go do a bunch of tutorials on like here's how to get started in like in Windsurf and all that. There's people younger than me can do it, and I can help them out. I mean, for me, mostly it's they don't have like they have pods that they kind of dynamically reassign based on the interest and like needs of the business. And I've been working on Fast Context, which we launched yesterday and has been received really really well. We have code maps that are launching next, and other models that I can't say yet. And then we have like other features that are being worked on, like on both the Windsurf and Devin side. So somewhat a little bit of like a marketing person, editor of the blog, and PM for features that are coming that are kind of my pet projects that I want to see in Windsurf and Devin. I do think that eventually, basically, we will level. I've already teased this in my announcement blog post, but basically, we need to like actually take evals like a lot more seriously
100%.
than are they're
Yeah.
done today. I think that is an area of active research that we want to publish more, and so eventually we want to sort of group that up into here's the like Cognition is kind of stealth in a sense that you don't really like publish much about the customer work because you're
Yeah.
too busy serving customers, and
Yep.
that's great. But like the wider world needs to know about the world, about the work, and we need to have publishable research.
Right.
And so I'm kind of like the forcing function to publish more things at Cognition. And so we'll call this Cognition Labs. We will publish more internal research. We'll publish more things that the wider world can use, even without using Devin or Windsurf directly. And hopefully that will create a bunch of good vibes. It will help, honestly, make the products work more rigorous, and hopefully, help us do frontier work that contributes to the industry and not just the Cognition bank account.
Yeah, 100%. I think the thing with Cognition is that I think it's a very aspirational company. Like, this is like a really big, exciting mission. And the team really is not screwing around, right? Like, it's like an incredible amount of effort has gone into both recruiting but also executing at every level of the stack, from the applied side to the research side to, like you talked about, evals to even down all the way down to DevRel. And so it is truly exciting. And if things work out the way that ideally they will work out, truly like an incredible company, a generational one for sure, in the making. And it's a very, very, very exciting thing. I think like kind of the way Scott talks about it is, you know, the way that we look at assembly now versus Python is kind of the way that maybe one day we'll look at, you know, interacting with Devin agents versus Python today. What do you think about that? What do you think about the mission of the company? Are you bullish on it? It's maybe you are bullish because that's why you joined. Like, what are your reservations?
The reservations are very obvious. The labs have woken up to the fact that people are building notable, sizable companies on top of their APIs, and they want a piece of that as well. So, Claude Code and Codex have come up, and they're decent products. And so I think like the agent labs kind of really have to lock in and focus on like what is the frontier of agents. And the ideal situation is that the lab, the agent, the model labs are like the big clouds, like the Azures, the Amazons, and they still have space for independent companies to be built on top of them that spike in various ways. So like so we'll see. I think there's a world that happens, and then I think there's obviously a world where the model and agent integration is too important, and then that just gets blown away by like $500 billion worth of GPUs. So we'll see. I think like that's why I think the I titled the blog post like the Devin is in the details, because it remains to be seen whether OpenAI wants to work on Bitbucket enterprise on-prem integration, like FedRAMP and SOC 2 certification. I don't know. Like, there's like a long tail of like agent work that needs to be deployed in the enterprise. And like the whole point of having an API business at all for OpenAI and Anthropic is that they wouldn't handle that stuff. So that's one. That's not a very satisfying answer. The second one is more satisfying in it, which is that agent systems dominate the model. So the performance of the overall agent system that can be built on top of the model and orchestrated by different models, including some special purpose sub-agent models like Fast Context, those would be more interesting. Meaning that it's just always a issue of debate in ML, whether you just want to scale the one big model to do everything, or you want a diversity of small little models that all have their own tasks. And to some extent, it will always be a fight. To some extent, you can build wrappers that have sustainable advantages as harnesses on top of models. We've already seen that happen with Codo and their Alpha Codium harness. And this is the same for Devin. It's basically kept up that same distance in performance. So I think like that's really interesting to see. And I don't know. Like sometimes, most of the time, bitter lesson doesn't really apply, and then every now and then it does apply, and it goes back and forth. But yeah, everyone here is aware of bitter lesson and finding it every day.
100%. Awesome. Okay, let's maybe switch gears a little bit, off of the sort of professional vibes that we've been going on, a little bit more into personal. So your motto: intentionality, intensity, integrity. So not many people have mottos, and I think it's really nice that you have a motto to your life, and you're pretty vocal about it. All three of them make sense, but at the same time, like, not many people can come up with that type of motto. Like, maybe just sort of tell us a little bit about, like, who is Sean Wong, you know, beyond the career? Like, who are you?
The question is so broad. I think the career is good. I'm also a singer. I'm also a community and like artistic writer person. I have written science fiction recently, and I want to do more. There's that. I think like the model thing is something that's relatively new. I only adopted it last year, and I'm still trying to figure out how to live it, right? There's some part of like personal values and all that that is aspirational, and some part of that is like it is a part of you. Aspirational is kind of like almost like it's not like lying, but it is close to lying in a sense that you are not that yet, but you really would like to be, and so you just repeat it to yourself until it's true, right? So I am not that intentional, I'm not that intense, and if I'm really being super honest with myself, there are some things I do that are not high integrity, but I want to be. So I
Sure.
think adopting that model makes it more likely to pursue
100%.
to be those things. And I think having a constrained set of values for me is 3, for other people it might be 7, for Amazon it's 14.
Yep.
It just helps you like prioritize, like does this thing or does this action, does this statement align with those things? If not, then why are you doing that? And so I think like, and then I think lastly, obviously, alliteration and rhyming are nice to have. So I think
Yeah.
like once I found that, it like fits so much for me that I can just repeat it as a mantra to myself and mostly cover or use it as a guide to life for everything I do. I think the most interesting one, by the way, is intensity.
Yeah.
I think that
Super important.
I think like kind of not obvious
It is.
to normies outside
Yep.
of San Francisco,
100%.
because I think a lot of people, their goal in life is to kind of just like have fun,
Yep.
enjoy life.
Yep.
And so, and like, it is not judgmental at all, in a sense that like they are probably happier. They are probably better friends. They're probably better partners and husbands and wives and girlfriends and boyfriends. But they'll probably not do much with their lives.
Yep.
And that's the trade-off that you make, and that's okay. Whereas for me, I'm like, yeah, life is short. Like, I do want to be intense about doing a small set of things right. And
Right.
like, I'm not even good at it. Like, I'm not good at focus. Like, I have 3 things going on. I have 3 jobs, and like, you know, people who are intense like probably should just do one job. But like, you know, they all focus around AI engineering at large, anyway, whatever. But like, I think that intensity, I actually stole it from OpenAI.
Yeah.
That is OpenAI's internal principles. And I think like the people who like intensity draws intensity. Intensity gets the best work out of you. Intensity leads to depth and leads to focus and leads to passion.
Yep.
And like all these good things. So I'm
Yep.
like, you know, intensity is a pretty good screening bar for what people do.
100%. Okay, and then let's move into maybe like a slightly deeper question. Like we sort of like briefly hinted at like basically what is the purpose of life, right? And like one sort of resounding theme here is impact, right? Like if life is short and you sort of want to have an impact on the world, that totally makes sense. I think the question then sort of becomes like, how do you sort of delineate what impact means, right? And like what impact means to you. I mean, clearly, I think you found impact in community, right? In building AI Engineer, like that is a community, right? In building Latent Space, that's essentially an asynchronous community for people to like learn and to share things. I think part of the reason why, we built this podcast was also something very similar of like, after you're gone, at least some part of you lives in some sense, right? And it's like kind of a way to record something for humanity and have that impact really be alive. But impact can also be measured in relationships, right? It can be measured in the people that you impact, the trajectories of their lives that they impact. So maybe just like tell us a little bit about how you think about impact and like how that sort of shapes the way that you've operated.
Yeah, I think I it's funny, I kind of rate myself as a B player in terms of impact because I'm good at what I do. I'm better than others, than many others that I know of. But I also see people who have way more ambitious impact than me, and I'm just like not there. And so it's kind of like weird to occupy like a middle space. Yeah, I think, for example, I organized the AI engineer conferences, and like
Sure.
a lot of people get their jobs. Like roughly, like you know, it's weird. Like something like year to year, I think the rough stat, based on my conversations with people, and like and just seeing them their job titles change, roughly 10% of people at every AI engineer like get their new jobs. You know, like so you like that's kind of impactful. Look, it's not like human. It's not going to change human history. No one's going to remember this in like 10 years. But like, if I like affected someone's life positively in some way, that's nice. That's like that's really cool, and that's good. But like, you know, last year one of my speakers, he spoke on stage, and then like at the after parties, a girl comes up to him and like, they start chatting, and now they're engaged, and that's impact. That's
It is.
you know. I got a couple together in San Francisco, which is like Asian couple too, and that's really hard. So like that's impact, and that's kind of cool. Yeah, so I think like impact, at least for me, is so far is like creating community and like creating opportunities for people to do what they're trying to do next.
Sure.
I think at a, that's B tier impact. I think A tier and S tier impact is doing impacting and affecting the lives of humans who maybe are not even born yet. So I think like that's really insightful. I don't operate at that level. I just operate at the maybe 5 to 10 year impact level of like someone's careers, impacting the AI engineering industry, which I think, look, without me, it would have happened anyway, but maybe with me, it maybe evolves in a more positive direction or accelerates a little bit. That's all. And like that's fine. By the way, I do have a theory of like the meaning of life.
Yeah.
If you search my Twitter for the meaning of life, you see it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like super relevant to the impacts conversation, but I do think about this sometimes.
Yeah. What do you think the meaning of life is, if you had to like give like a really quick overview?
Yeah, three things. One, having agency and free will. Two, locally reversing entropy. And three, giving those two things to current lives and future lives. So I'll like the first one is very fun because I can prove that that is the meaning of life.
Right.
What's the difference between living things and non-living things?
Sure.
Living things have their own agency and free will, and
Sure.
or illusion of free will,
Sure.
because they don't obey momentum. They can
Sure.
change their own momentum,
Sure.
hopefully with some agency and free will.
Sure.
And that, like, when you cross from living to non-living, you no longer are able to do that,
Right.
and it's kind of cool. It also creates some dimension of morality of good and evil. When you deprive somebody of their agency and free will, you are taking away life from that person,
Right.
and you should obviously treat that very, very seriously.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of cool. And then locally, reverse entropy. Obviously, entropy always increases, but locally, you can reverse it and create art and create something that's meaningful for life, because non-life doesn't give a shit, but life does. Life cares about other life. Life cares about art and meaning. And locally reverse entropy. So if you can do that in a meaningful way for your fellow humans or for future humans, you've done good.
Awesome. Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's a really interesting framework. I mean, I think a framework that we use is like, improve yourself, improve the lives of the other people around you, improve the planet. Kind of like, how do you like, kind of like growth mindset. Maybe this is like super cliche though. But I can definitely see like some commonalities at least there. And that's awesome to hear.
Yeah,
Awesome.
there's a Chinese phrase, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like really hard to if you pump this into LLM, they'll find it for you.
Sure.
Xiu sheng qi jia, zhi guo ping tian xia.
Okay.
So, fix your body, get your house in order, fix your country, and then peace on earth. So like it kind of in that order
Good
is kind of what
motto.
he did.
Yeah.
So this saying goes back thousands of years, and
Yeah.
he've infinitely rediscovered it.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, we are getting close to time, so maybe we'll end with like one last question here. So Sean, you've done a lot, right? Like, I mean, we pretty much have covered like pretty much everything from, Singapore to Penn to, some time in finance to, man, so much like DevRel to like AI Engineer Summit to everything. What are you excited about next? Like, you're constantly sort of switching different things, and I think one thing that we really respect about you is that you've done it, at least we think, with like a high level of integrity and a high level of, yeah, I mean, not to keep using your own words, but like intentionality to really make a positive impact and to build a community, right? Do you just want to keep on growing AI Engineer Summit? Like, I mean, like it is AI right now, right? But like in 20 years, like who knows if it's still the AI age, right? It might be some other age. Like, what do you want to do next? What are you excited about next? Do you just want to keep growing kind of these three things, Latent Space, AI Engineer Summit, and your role here at Cognition, or anything new on the horizon?
Nothing new. Hoping to get married soon.
Yeah,
That'll be
congrats on
fun.
that.
Married, have kids. I'm not there yet, by the way. I'm just,
Well, yeah, well, no,
vaguely,
eventually. We can
I'm dating,
manifest.
but
We can
like,
manifest.
still open
We can
question.
manifest.
So like, yeah, But like, no, I think that's a big part of life.
It is,
Have
it
kids,
is.
people, populate. So yeah, so no, no, not, nothing crazy. Like, I think like part of maturing and like getting older is like trying to play long-term games with long-term people.
Sure.
In like, yes, you can have a you can like have a lot of search in your early years, but you should eventually anneal and lower the temperature and like focus in and lock in and like
Right.
do one thing for a long time. Right now I'm doing three things. Hopefully I do them for a long time.
Yeah.
So I end up working the next 10 years on all three things. I'd be very, very happy.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Very, 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 very last question. What do you look for in your friends? Because it like something, it kind of feels like you are the type of person that builds strong, long-lasting relationships with people of high quality that you believe are fundamentally good human beings. At least that's the vibe that we're getting here. And I have a feeling that you have a high bar for the people that you are close with, that you really believe in, and that you really want to spend time with. To the extent that you're comfortable sharing, like, how do you sort of do that? I feel like this is something that, like, maybe the tech bubble doesn't really think about, but a large part of life as humans is like we are social animals, is like surrounding yourself with the right people. And that doesn't just mean professionally, right? That can mean your partner, that can mean friends. And I think a lot of people think a lot about like what makes a good friend. Do you have any sort of advice that you want to share there?
I think there are a lot of fair weather friends in tech, and so
Yeah.
you only really know if you're a friend when they're going through some shit,
Right.
and you're no, they tell you,
Right.
and you tell them,
Right.
and like being around for each other through the tough times qualifies you for the good times,
Right.
and so like that's nice. And then I
Yeah.
think like not being pretentious, not being transactional, these are things that people say a lot, but
Yeah.
then it's hard to mean. Obviously having shared interests, I think like there should be, I have a climb club and we climb, and
Yeah, that's
that's the
great.
only thing. So it's the only thing we do, but we like that's the thing, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like other people like do the pickleball or
Of
like lunge
course.
and all that,
Of
it's
course,
fun.
classic, classic. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, I think like also like there are like some things that are like instant qualifications.
Sure.
Like if you like this world, I have like a whole thing about this world. If you like Dropout TV, I've talked about Dropout TV before. So like, yeah, you just you just hang out there. I definitely think that also like I think male friendships are very different than female friendships.
Yep,
Male
indeed.
friendships, I think there's this meme. Man,
There's a lot of
something
memes. There's a lot of memes about this, bro.
like
Yeah, there's a lot,
it's
there's a lot.
like you talk about something and you like have like 4 hour conversation and then you
Sure.
don't see for 5 years and then you like pick up where you left off, right?
Sure.
Like that's like a male friendship. And like, yeah, that's legit.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I feel like this is super informative to all of our viewers. I mean, Sean's obviously being very humble, but he really has had a tremendous impact on the AI community between hosting, my goodness, I can't even count how many events at NeurIPS, the Lane Space podcast. He really has sort of been like an integral part of the community. And continues to be. And so, I mean, like, kind of like the purpose of our podcast is also, at least temporarily right now, while we're in the AI age, to help be able to sort of bring the top people together. And so, like, we would be amiss to not include somebody that's been this foundational. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.